Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm calling you out of the bounds of Kalendar.
Well, Kalendar, we all know, is a vengeful god, but perhaps we can escape it. This is the second podcast I've done today, which started with somebody introducing me by saying, "Hi, Dan." It was stolen from you, is what I'm saying, because I was on a podcast, which the host of that podcast will hear because he listens to this show.
Oh.
And he invited me on to his podcast.
What podcast was that?
That was the What the If podcast with subscriber Philip Shane, he and his co-host invite on somebody and they talk about sciencey, like, what if X? And then you just kind of spend a while discussing, like,
nice.
Well, what if X?
What if,
so
indeed.
We talked about encryption and stuff, and that show will be out next week. So I invite you all to check back on next Tuesday or something for it. So that was kind of fun. It's a fun podcast.
Yeah, this is my third of four podcasts today.
Yeah, but I'm going. Must be a day that ends in Y.
Well, I'm going. What the problem with doing a podcast every day or so is not a big deal. It's my job. That's fine. The problem is when you take a day off. You gotta, like, so I have two podcasts that I'm doing today because tomorrow I'm gonna be at the baseball game because Giants opening day and I'm gonna go.
Right,
it's
sure,
gonna rain,
sure.
Which means we're gonna be there forever and we're gonna get wet and I'm not happy about that, but I'm gonna go anyway. So instead I have to spend today doing lots of podcasts.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I have to plan ahead a little bit, because in late July / early August, I will be probably going away for a couple weeks.
Honeymoon?
Yeah. So, yeah. Got to figure out. Because,
and you're getting married. That's probably going to put a crimp in the old schedule, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's on a weekend.
Yeah, just get right back to it.
How much more could there be to do?
I'm stalking my flights to go to your wedding, actually. That's what I've been doing this week, is stalking the rates and trying to figure out when we're coming in and when we're going out and all of that. And that's been my week, Dan. So thanks. It's fine.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Enjoy.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
Somebody out there is listening and is like, I can't believe Jason got invited and I didn't.
I don't know who that person is, but I'm very sorry.
So hello to Scott McNulty, I guess.
Nemesis. Anyways.
I'd like you walk out for your wedding and Scott and Marisa are having like a recommitment ceremony on the other side and you're like, oh, Nemesis, you did it to me.
Yep. Scott McNulty.
Yes, that's what are Nemesis for?
Well,
this is quite weak, I think. Quite weak.
You know, it was. I was writing my Macworld column earlier today, and it was one of those, as we've discussed before, it was one of those days where I spent a really long time getting frustrated because every idea I had seemed like garbage. And then finally, like, you know, with, you know, I was at a coffee shop that closed at 4, and around, you know, 3, I'm like, oh, I know what I'll write about. And then I mostly finished it while I was just sitting there for that last hour at the coffee shop.
Yeah. Isn't that something? You spend 3 hours going, I don't know what to write, and then 40 minutes writing it, and then you're like, oh, there it is. It took me 40 minutes. Also, 4 hours.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's the fun of... Now, imagine you're doing that for a novel, where you spend a lot of time doing that. It's like, oh, I spend like 50 hours sitting around going, what the hell am I going to put, or how am I going to fix this? And then like a fraction of that time actually writing. Except it's less productive, I feel. I feel like the ratio is worse there.
Yeah, that's welcome to the world of writing, everybody. That's what it's like.
What a life. What a stupid job. I love it, but it is sometimes
it's what
very
you want to do, but there's things about it that are the worst. That's just how it is. Yeah, quiet week. We've said this on Download too, although then we proceeded to talk for an hour, so obviously there's stuff going on.
Yep.
But like on the Apple side, I thought it was interesting that we got the Mark Sullivan, our former colleague who worked at PC World, who's now at Fast Company. He wrote a piece about all of the problems that Apple is having with 5G, which I thought was really interesting. And we did talk about it on Download a little bit. The idea that, okay, so Qualcomm is a leader in 5G.
Right.
But Apple hates Qualcomm and Qualcomm hates Apple, and they're suing each other. Intel is providing 5G modems at some point, but what Mark Sullivan said is they may not be able to get Apple samples in time, and they may not be able to get into full production. You know, it may be one of those things where if Apple commits to doing a 5G iPhone for the fall of 2020, they're going to be there in like the early summer of 2020 going, Intel? Hello, Intel?
In my head, by the way, this is all playing out like it's the opening credits to the Brady Bunch. Like, and then like Qualcomm and slides then, in and Intel slides in.
And then there's Apple, which is hiring people from Intel and Qualcomm and made their announcement with the mayor of San Diego that they're building a whole facility, or they're in a whole facility there, expanding their presence in San Diego, where all of these Qualcomm engineers are, in order to steal those people away and build their own radio chip. But that won't happen, according to Mark Sullivan's story. That's not going to happen by 2020. That's more like 2021, 2022. So they're in this real quandary about what to do with 5G. And there is a question about like how big a deal is it going to be. But I think I could guess that even if 5G isn't that big a deal, if people are talking about and shipping 5G phones now, I think maybe if Apple's still not there in 16 to 24 months, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not great, but it is an interesting point because, as you say, like, what takes longer, Apple building that phone or people actually having 5G in places where they can use it? Because I gotta feel like the network rollout is going to happen, but is it going to be done by that point?
I think it's more of a marketing feature for most people than anything else. I think the challenge is going to be, though, that you're thinking, well, 5G is coming and Apple still doesn't, I'm going to have this phone for 2 or 3 years.
My phone says 5G on it already.
Yeah,
so.
5GE. It's for excellent. It's the most excellent of all the Gs.
They had this before, didn't they? Was it with 3G or like the original iPhone? Had 2G, but LTE. 3G was already kind of a thing at that point.
Yes, no, they did 3G, and then when they went to 3G, 4G, right, which is LTE, AT&T defined their 3G, faster 3G network as 4G.
Right, yes. No, I remember that. I was saying that, like,
oh, that Apple
it's not
was
the
behind
first time
on
Apple's
3G.
Been behind the cue ball a little
original,
bit in terms of that. Yeah.
Behind the cue ball is not a phrase.
Eight ball? Behind the eight ball.
Yeah, that's right. The cue ball, you could be behind because you
be behind
just shoot
any
it.
Of these things?
So, you don't want to be in front of it. It'll roll right over you.
Oh, that's a good
idea. They launched the original iPhone without 3G, even though 3G was rolling out. And everybody's like, I can't believe you're just doing Edge and you're not doing 3G. And then the next year, they did the iPhone 3G.
I think that's the most likely scenario, is they have to find a story like where it's like, well, you know, we're committed to bringing the best in 5G, and we want to make sure that people have the opportunity to use it because their network has been rolled at blah blah blah. Like, to me, I feel like there's going to have to be some spin, because you can't make the modems, right? Like, there's literally nothing you can do about that if you don't have the parts.
They could announce, I mean, they could do what Samsung and some others have done, which is announce that they're doing a 5G version of whatever iPhone they announce in fall 2020 and say it's going to ship later. And then it's just a matter of whenever Intel delivers the parts, and that's a separate model. And it maybe costs more. I mean, they could do that, but again,
seems like it's
tough.
They got a lot of bad options, basically, it sounds like.
This is why they pay these people the big money, because it's a tough, a bunch of tough decisions there.
Again, the easy decision is just slapping a new name on your screen. It's 5G already.
It's 5G. It's Apple 5G. It's the best.
I don't know. No, nobody.
It's 6G, Dan. It's 6G. We decided.
F it, we're going to 6Gs. I don't know. It's an interesting point, though. It's a, like, I think that it's always curious to see how much people actually like register that kind of thing too, right? Like, it's by which I mean the consumers, right? People like us are going to talk about this kind of stuff, but to the consumers who are buying new iPhones, is their primary concern going to be the number of Gs? I don't know. It probably used to be more, right, when we had 3G, 4G, but like LTE being a thing has kind of derailed the whole G, like, treadmill, as it were.
Yeah.
Derailed the treadmill.
Derailed the whole treadmill. The whole treadmill has
been
derailed.
The eight ball was on the treadmill.
Imagine, if you will, a treadmill on rails, so that as you don't move, your treadmill moves.
It's the new exercise fad that's sweeping the nation.
That
was interesting. There was some other stuff too today. There was like just before we started recording this, I guess there was some news that the Apple had poached this machine learning guy from Google who has a snappy nickname. They call him the Ganfather. This was just a thing I learned about like in the last half hour. But he, so he invented this, he was the like sort of the main guy behind this thing called something adversarial.
General Adversarial Networks.
General Adversarial Network. So essentially, like the kind of things that where they like make up fake faces and stuff like that is they basically pit neural nets against each other and working on the same data set to see what they can synthesize between them. And apparently this guy was really, really, you know, sort of formative in that. And now he is going to work at Apple on the special projects division, which is, I believe, Bob Mansfield's team that is doing probably the autonomous driving stuff.
Yeah, but who knows? Who knows?
But no one knows. Yeah.
Some other
That's
project.
That's sort of the theory, but like that is the same department where they laid off all those people. And, you know, it was sort of, it was a question of what they were refocusing
Could
on.
Could be a different project.
Could be a different project. It does have a plural projects in the name.
It's true.
Could be more than one.
My Macworld piece this week was about the new iMac, because I've got the new iMac here behind me and the, you know, iPad iMac Pro in front of me. And so I've got like two iMacs.
Stuck in the middle?
I am stuck in the gap, in the iMac Pro gap. And I tried to go through like all the differences between them, because I do think there are people who, I think the Venn diagram of the iMac and the iMac Pro touch now in a way that they didn't before. They were like two circles, and now there's like there is a little bit of overlap in performance. Although some of the performance differences I saw were probably due to RAM and graphics card, because the graphics the GPU on the iMac Pro is still better than even the top of the line GPU on the iMac. But it's an interesting exercise in listing all the things that are that you get, because it really is like. The new iMac is last year's, or it's 2012's iMac body with the latest processors in it. Whereas the iMac Pro is December 2017 re-envisioning of the iMac. It's got a T2, right? Like, outside of the holdover products that haven't been updated in a while, like the MacBook and the touch bar-less MacBook Pro and the non-Retina MacBook Air, right? Like, other than those, and they haven't been updated in a while, this is the last Mac without a T2, or without a, you know, without an ARM processor inside of it.
Of some kind, yeah.
Of some kind, T2 or T1. So, that's not great, but at the same time, you know, you can get very similar performance for $1,500 less. Right. By opting for the i9, the fans are loud. They don't seem to be as aggressive. And there are some videos that people have done on the internet, and they don't seem to be as aggressive maybe as last year's. And I don't know whether that's the chip being better with the heat or not. But you know, it is like luxury car versus standard. Like when you go to iMac Pro, you get that better cooling system. You get the better webcam. You get the security and speed issues of the T2, which is also acting as the disk controller. You get the encryption on the fly in the T2. You get the T2 is handling the audio. It's got like four microphones, so it's doing like noise canceling and stuff if you're using it for FaceTime or things like that. It's got the ECC RAM in it, which means that it's more stable. It's got four Thunderbolt 3 ports on it. It can do two 5K external displays instead of just one for the iMac. Or if you really want to go whole hog, you can do four 4K displays versus two on the iMac. They're a bunch of things. It's got the 10 gig Ethernet instead of the 1 gig Ethernet. But if all of those features are like pointless to you,
right?
You can and you're not worried about the sound of the fans and things like that. You can spec up a regular iMac to basically touch or in some places surpass the iMac Pro in performance for $1,500 less, which is a lot of money.
This is really interesting, and I touched upon this in the column I wrote for Macworld this week, because it's fascinating to me that Apple is spending a lot of time with the Mac catering to Pro users because of the fact that you can spec up your iMacs. You've got an iMac Pro. The most recent Mac Mini can be spec'd up to a point that's pretty respectable if you want to do like professional level stuff on it. It's not an underpowered machine by any chance. And then you have the Mac Pro still to be seen, which
still to be seen.
Know, And you're talking about a portion of the market that, though it is inhabited by many people we know, is a relatively small portion of the Mac market. I mean, the Mac Pro, they've said in the past, was like 1% of Mac sales or something like that, like the in 2013. I remember there was a point at which they were talking, like, it was very, very small. And it is a market, clearly, I think the reason Apple is doing that is because they believe they have a potential for a lot of growth in that market. But it is truly a lot of products aimed at a professional marketplace. And the other half of that might be sort of Apple thinking, well, we'll sell fewer, but, you know, we really will make it up on margin because these are expensive machines because there's a lot of power in them. But it is fascinating to me at the same time that they really are, after all these criticisms, you know, especially from pro users about Apple, oh, Apple's not serious about the Mac anymore. Like, they've got like literally four or five models that are specifically aimed at the pro market.
Yeah, I mean, part of that may just be that's who's buying those computers, and that, you know, the non-pros are buying the base MacBooks. Model iMacs, or they're buying MacBooks or MacBook Airs.
Or iPads, frankly.
And then everybody else is just buying iPads, right? And they're not buying necessarily Macs as much anymore. But the people who really need Macs, it is that, you know, they need the truck. The thing is, not everybody is buying the Mac because it's a truck, but a lot of people are. And the people who aren't are probably buying base model iMacs and MacBook Airs and MacBooks. And that's fine. But yeah, it is interesting to see. They're up to something. That's what I'm going to say. I think they're up to something.
Because it also makes me wonder what the Mac Pro is going to look like compared to, here we have all these other products that are kind of in that area. So the Mac Pro has to have a different value proposition, right? And, you know, obviously we've heard them bandy about the word modular. And we know that a lot of the, if they're designing it all in sort of opposition to the experience with the 2013 model, then they're going to be hopefully looking very hard at the things that didn't do well, or that still took a lot of flack for, and trying to figure out, well, if what people want is this is what we have to deliver. And it may be something that looks closer to a Mac Mini than an iMac, I assume. But in some, again, just in the sense of being like a CPU, your old school, like when you used to buy a computer and it's like, here's your CPU and here's your monitor and here's your keyboard. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes. And I guess I feel like it seems pretty, it would seem like WWDC would be a good point to talk about that, since you have a very big pro audience.
It's got to be there. I mean, they announced the iMac Pro there, even though they didn't ship until December, because that's your audience for that product.
And it was, as Gruber pointed out, it was, what, 2 years ago, I think, today, that the... at least that he wrote his piece, which I think so, 2 years ago this week, that Apple had that meeting where they invited people to come talk about like the future of the Mac, basically.
Yes, we admit we made some problems.
So interesting. So 2 years, it took slightly longer than failing to build a wireless charging pad. Mm-hmm. So that's good, I guess.
I'm pretty sure it's going to ship. No, in fact, it's funny when people talk about AirPower that I haven't heard that many people bring up the trash can Mac Pro, but that's actually, you could argue, the most recent obvious product failure that Apple has done, even more than the keyboard, because that's a product they announced with a lot of fanfare and they shipped once, and then literally they're just like, oops, and have not touched it since.
It was really a misstep I agree. I briefly considered doing a piece that was about like previous Apple missteps. Mm-hmm. And I was going to do the one where like we were sort of talking about this elsewhere, I think in the last day or two, about like, you know, the image of Steve Jobs never making mistakes. And I was going to be like, here are all the things that went terribly wrong, right? Like, I mean, you could throw things like the iPod Hi-Fi in there. Uh-huh. Like, not that it was a bad product, but it was not the right product
at
that
time. But yeah, it was a perfectly fine speaker, but it was a bad product and bad price. The hockey puck mouse, I think the touch button iPod was a huge UI mistake that they went with, and the buttonless shuffle.
Yeah. And I was thinking the even things like the iPhone price drop. Actually cutting the price of the iPhone, which also tied in today, which I sort of, this is kind of where my article was hovering around, was not quite that, but like the HomePod price drop, which also happened today, I believe, right, as we record this, which is a very rare move that Apple changes the pricing on a shipping product midstream with no changes to that product.
Yep.
That is a fascinating move that says to me that HomePod is not selling nearly as well as they'd like And yet, that probably won't fix it.
No, and it's and they only cut it, what, $50? And it's probably $100 too expensive. But,
yeah,
you know, I will tell you, and I, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it here before, but I bought a I bought another Retina MacBook Air the other week. And we'll see where it goes. It may be destined for just for me to use. When I traveled to New York the other week and I was using my old MacBook Air, I thought, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if I just had a new MacBook Air that I basically designated for when I travel, instead of trying to do the, you know, the iPad thing, which is fun to do, but it's a lot easier to just bring the laptop and press the buttons and use the Mac software. Or I might, you know, have Julian use it, or Jamie could use it instead of her little MacBook. Or there's lots of options there. But the reason I bought it really is that it was on sale at Amazon for $9.99. And it's that same thing where it's like you get this feeling of like, oh, well, for that price, it's a good buy. And like that product is great at $9.99, the base Air, but not at $11.99, which is its official price. And the HomePod is the same thing, where we all looked at it and we said, $250. But not $350. Yeah.
Right. I bought a second one over Christmas when it was like they were being discounted.
Me too.
I think I paid like $265 or something for it.
Yeah. I think it's a much more competitive product at $250 than it is at $350 or $300.
Because even there, it's still at the high end of the smart speaker market, but it's also adding, you know, really great sound and stuff like that. But I think the bigger problem with the HomePod, which is sort of what I'm touching on in my piece, the challenges that Apple's got in the year coming forward, I think the bigger problem with the HomePod is Apple, they kind of have pulled this same sort of Mac Pro thing where it's like, there's been a little bit of software update to it, but it's been out for more than a year, and it doesn't get talked about. They don't spend any time on it. It's hard to tell if Apple is committed to that as a product line or just like, well, we've planted our flag in the smart speaker market. Cool, we're moving on to the next thing. Like, I can't tell that they actually have any interest in this really as a product. And I think that will be the interesting story to hear, you know, for the rest of this year is like, is there a point where they say, well, you know, now we've cut the price on that, we've also got X to bring to this, or a different product at a smaller price point or something, because either they care about this or they don't. And right now it sure feels like they don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a place in Apple's product line for premium products that are very profitable and aren't enormous sellers, but the HomePod has probably gone too far up that direction, right? Like, I think the HomePod is a good product, but then again, what did we say? The iPod Hi-Fi was a good product too.
Sure.
The problem was that it was priced wrong and people didn't want it, and it was rejected by the market. And that may be where HomePod is now. I like the HomePod. I think it's a good product, but it's too expensive and there are other options. And you know, that I think the question is really like, are they happy to keep doing it, figuring that they'll learn and grow and they'll do better versions of it, and they keep it around, or do they just kind of like walk it off into the sunset?
Well, and the challenge with it is that since it's so predicated on Siri, then, you know, they have to, and they clearly care about Siri as a platform, right?
Yeah.
You know, they've clearly spent a lot of time getting, you know, staffing up on that. And, you know, they've got the Gianandrea, who they got from Google, who's sort of heading the AI stuff and Siri stuff. Like, clearly Siri is really important to them. But the HomePod as a product that has Siri at its very core, feels at times underpowered and underwhelming when it comes to those kinds of functions. It doesn't really have a good setup or handling of, say, multiple people in a house. You know, there are a lot of things that you feel like, oh, it would be cool if my HomePod could do this, and yet it doesn't really seem to have a facility for all the things that you can do with Siri on your other devices, where Siri is like an option of how you might want to do things. It's like, this is the only way to do things on the HomePod, and it should be better. And so that's the interesting thing, is like for something that they spent and they're clearly that invested in, it doesn't seem like it's necessarily all trickled down to the HomePod in terms of their interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately products like this, Apple should keep doing, and whether they got it wrong this time or whether they priced it wrong or whatever, you know, I think I think with a lower price and better Siri, it's fine. But that's sure, that. Yeah. Those are all the challenges. There was a good thing that came up on ATP this week that I'll mention here. Somebody wrote in about profiles, and I thought, oh boy, like, you know, you open the Netflix app and it says who is watching. Right. You open the Hulu app and it says who is watching. And Apple TV, it's just like, you're just, yeah. And this you're is this all, thing.
Yeah.
Apple has this, has been so tied into this one-to-one device to person relationship. And the HomePod is a great example of where it breaks. Like I could set up HomePod and I've ranted about this before, but like our Echo is set up to do shopping list stuff, and you can add things using the Echo to our shopping list app, and it shows up in all, on all of our phones when we're at the store. Great. I could set that up with the HomePod, but if I am not in the house physically, it fails. So I just can't do it because it's going to ask my phone to do the thing instead of just using the web. And that's just, it's totally broken. Like either it needs to pair to multiple devices and be able to tell when Lauren is there that she's talking to her phone and I'm talking to my phone, or it needs to attach to web services that are always available. But still there are multiple people. Apple TV has multiple people. I did think when they were talking about it, that would be a great TVOS update feature.
Oh, yeah.
Is to do user profiles that were like API based. So like Apple would ask who's watching, or you could say who was watching, but also apps like Netflix or Hulu could see
into that.
Who's watching and not have to ask themselves, which would be a nice like user experience feature. But it's absolutely true. Like we're going to use all of this clever machine learning to recommend TV shows for you, except if your kid is watching, then everything that gets recommended for you is kid shows. And it's like, but I don't, it's not me, it's them. I don't want to see that. And this is just, it's a weakness that Apple had because they were so focused on the one-to-one relationship of iPhones.
Right.
And they were never really great. At least they had multiple accounts on the Mac. It was never great, but it was there. iPads have never gotten it.
The iPad one is the one that blows me away too. I mean, they sort of finally made a concession for stuff and used in schools.
Yeah, but it's a terrible hack. And on the iPhone, I mean, it's all the stems from the iPhone. The iPhone didn't need to be a multi-user device, and therefore it's not. But like iPad's a great example where, you know, Touch ID or Face ID, like I should be able to.
It's authentication, right off the basically its problem is solved. All you need to do, like, you know, in the sense of having an authentication system built in, it's already there.
And on Macs, so with Touch ID, it does that. If you put your finger on for your user, it switches to your user. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
I know who this is, right? I have that information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that weakness is harming Siri and Apple TV and HomePod and other stuff that they're doing. And, you know, I hope that they are aware and that there is a way out of it for them, because all of this stuff is a challenge. And it's like, I get why they are where they are, because the iPhone was so successful that everything they did was about the product profile, the priorities of making a great iPhone. But when you branch into these other categories, suddenly it's all like, you know, it breaks down.
Right, right. And it's obviously a lot harder because you got to spend all the time developing for those specific things rather than following the pattern. But one also hopes that as the iPhone slows a little bit in terms of its meteoric sales, that perhaps they might be, well, we got to look at diversifying anyways.
Yeah. You would hope so. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, it'll be interesting, especially with the services too, right? Like, you know, they're launching their own TV service and it doesn't look like they have any profile system a la Netflix or Hulu. But one wonders if there is an issue in there too. Well, I'm curious to see if that changes their thinking on it at all as they invest heavier into the living room.
Yep. Anything else?
I don't think so. That's, yeah, like you said, not much going on this week. And then we talked for half an hour.
It happens. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for being a Six Color supporter. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to go to a baseball game tomorrow. And then we'll be back at it next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.